This episode is brought to you by Bitdefender, team partner of Ferrari. Visit bitdefender.com to learn more about how Bitdefender supports Ferrari to stay ahead of cyber threats and how you can make your digital life safer. In 2023, Red Bull Racing are the team at the top. But long before they became the all-conquering titans that they are today, Red Bull made a habit of bringing talented young drivers into Formula One. Talent like Vitantonio Liuzzi.
Without Red Bull, I don't know if I would have been in Formula One. But possibly yes, because I was definitely winning everything that was in my career in the early step, karting, Formula Renault, Formula 3000. Everything I was doing it right. But then you never know, you know, the chance to be in Formula One is only for 20 people.
Liuzzi certainly enjoyed a sparkling junior career. He even beat Michael Schumacher to become, in Tonio's words, the most famous go-kart champion in the world. But his Formula One career lacked the same fizz.
These are the things that change your life, change your career. When you end up in the podium, you enter into a different group of driver. You know, I had a few chances, let's say 4 or 5 times chance of being on the podium, but for whatever reason, the car always broke. Maybe the car always hated to see me on the podium. I don't know what was the reason, but it was a shame because these are the results that can change your future and your career.
Hello and welcome to F1 Beyond the Grid with me, Tom Clarkson. From 2005 to 2011, Vitantonio Liuzzi raced in 80 Grand Prix for the likes of Red Bull, Toro Rosso and Force India. He scored 26 World Championship points, but despite a trophy-laden career in karting and in the junior categories, Liuzzi never stepped on the podium in Formula One. Today, he swapped the racetrack for race control, often enforcing the rules as a driver steward for the FIA. Taking me back to his Red Bull days, Tonio discusses whether the team's party reputation was a distraction for him, the politics at Toro Rosso, and why the nature of his departure from the team in 2007 left a sour taste. Liuzzi also relives his famous victory over Michael Schumacher at the 2001 Karting World Championship Finals, and he tells me how that started a friendship between them. We talk about his memories of driving for Force India, missed podium opportunities, why he joined a backmarker team at the end of his career, which current Formula One driver reminds Tonio of himself, and much, much more. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Tonio, thank you for your time. It's great to have you on the show. Your relationship with Formula One has changed over the years. You're driver turned FIA steward these days. How is life, first of all, as a driver steward?
Totally different, I have to say. Has been a huge change. I cannot obviously say that I used to prefer driving because I love adrenaline in my life. But I have to say that this step has been a big change in my career. And being in the other side of the desk is quite interesting because it shows how many tools people used to have to judge us when we were driving. And sometimes we used to feel that we were right in an overtaking, in a crash, or in some maneuver. And now I can see from the other side why I was discussing with the stewards in the past. And why many times they could have been right, because they had so many tools to analyze things. And I have to say, I enjoy this position. I enjoy to be back in the Formula One track, in the paddock where I grew up. And it's always a nice feeling, because Formula One is always, for me, my life.
When you see an incident on track, can you tell immediately who's at fault?
Really quickly. I have to say the 90% of the idea, I make it quickly. Thereafter, obviously, because as I said before, we have many tools to analyze the accident with the cameras, with radio communication between the drivers and the engineers, with the telemetry. A lot of tools that are really important to see the motion or how the accident arrives and what the driver is thinking or what the driver is doing in the car. And after we realize quickly all these details, we have really professional people inside our room that makes this happen really quickly. And that will help us to judge in a short time. But sometimes, of course, even in a crash that at the beginning I felt sure about the result, after with all the camera angle and the radio communication, it changed my mind.
That's really interesting. And do the drivers, when they come into the stewards room, do they try and pull the wool over your eyes, or do they not bother because they know you're a racer and you can read the situation right?
We are drivers, so we always used to find an excuse for what happened. So they all keep trying. But I have to say, in a fair way, some they try to play games or they try to play politics when they explain. They try to be smart, smarter. But at the end of the day, we recognize this pretty quickly because we have been in the same spot of them. We only analyze, we listen to what they say. We put in account, in consideration, in the whole package before we take a decision. And then after, we are four stewards all together, we share our information. The driver advisor or steward obviously is that one that counts most to analyze the accident, but then we decide all together the final consequence.
Now, Tony, what about your own career? How do you look back on Formula One? You did 80 races. I lived through all of those races from the media center, and it seemed to me to be a case of right place, wrong time. Is that how you look back at it?
Yeah, you took my words from my mouth. I was definitely one of the lucky drivers to reach Formula One because there are only 20 in the world, and I felt really lucky to reach the target. But of course, as you said, in my career, I had a good chance because I've been with good teams, but always at the right place in the wrong time, because I was always, I called the start-upper of every team, because I was at Red Bull in the first year, at Toro Rosso in the first year, for Cindy at the first year, HRT at the second year. So every time I was one of the drivers that helps the development of the team, helped the development. And as every business, when you start getting results, achieving some points, money involvement in the team gets bigger and bigger. You know, many times there are politics entering the team because there are more interest inside the team. And I was always really weak in that. I was only basically a driver that want to go 110% every single lap of qualify, free practice and race. I was always myself, and maybe this was not helping me because I was always saying everything I felt and didn't play my side. That was a big shame because I think we had a really great performance every time, really great opportunities, but the politics, I think this didn't support me.
Interesting to hear you say that, because you had a very experienced manager in Peter Collins, formerly of Benetton and Lotus fame. Between the two of you, you still struggled to negotiate the politics. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. Peter was an amazing person, and there was the person that brought me to Formula One and pushed me actually to move to single seater when I was a go-kart driver. It was the man that made me switch in my mind to make this effort and this try. But as me, he was a really passionate person about motorsport. He was always thinking mainly at the sportive side, less at the politics side or the economic side. So I think this was not playing in our side, because we were only focusing result, speed, going faster, helping the team to grow up, development, and all these things regarding the team itself. But Formula One is such a huge business that involved also other side. And in the other side, we were pretty weak.
When you think of yourself as a driver, what do you think were your greatest strengths?
Speed.
Lots of that.
Definitely my speed. In my career, I had teammates like Ricciardo, Vettel, drivers that they've been champions, won many races, and many other drivers that were teammates of mine. But I was always really fast and competing with them without any problem in terms of pure speed. But at the end, my career took a different way, and it's a shame because I felt that I could have given a lot more to the sport and to myself. But I cannot say it didn't work, because it was still quite a decent career, but could have been much better.
Technically, were you strong?
Technically, I was really strong. I was really good in developing the car. I was used many time from Red Bull when I was a Toro Rosso driver to do the test for them in 2006 and beginning of 7. So I was working a lot in the wind tunnel with my engineer because I love the aerodynamic side, I love the technical side, and I used to love to be part of a development of a car, something that not every driver many times likes. I realize that not everybody likes, but for me the technical side and developing the car was part of a complete driver, and I really enjoyed spending time, especially in the wind tunnel, because it was really an amazing time with Force India, especially because I spent a lot of time with them in England, and I have to say it's something that I really love.
When you were a kid, were you big in the sciences? Did you study physics? And
not at all. Nothing at all. I cannot say that I was the best at school, because I was not. But I was always curious. I always liked to push myself to the limit. I used to love airplanes in general, but I never thought I would have ended up being a Formula One driver, because I was playing soccer as all the Italians do in this when they are kids. But not really. I just became super passionate about the technical development when I was a go-kart driver, because when I was driving, I used to love following my mechanics, understanding the changes in the kart, understanding why something was happening when you change a rear axle, a chassis, tube dimension, an angle of the camber, caster, the Hackerman, all these things that are really technical things, but I used to be curious to understand what was happening in the go-kart when I was driving and feeling myself while driving it.
Well, Tonio, you were a brilliant kart driver, and I want to discuss next one world championship in particular, and that was 2001 Kirpin. Michael Schumacher did that race and you beat him. What are your memories of it?
I think that was the most important day of my career, because it made me the most famous karting world champion in history, thanks to Michael Schumacher that came to race with us that weekend in his home race, in his home track. And thanks to him, I won the championship, the world title there, and I was famous all around the world, because I was the guy who beat Schumacher in a karting world track. But it was an amazing day, and especially was a big switch in my mentality, because being beside a champion like Michael at the time, that at the beginning I thought he was coming and stealing our fame, because we were fighting for the championship, me and another colleague of karting, and he came and nobody took care of us. We were part of his race in Kirpin. But then after I realized that work beside Formula One, at the time I think it was two or three time world champion, switched my mind to understand how much professional and the state of mind you need to develop yourself as a Formula One driver. You know, you really see the passion and the focus that Michael had in his eyes when he was driving, even only a go-kart. And that made a big switch in my head, because I thought that if I wanted to become somebody similar to him, I had to become a lot more focused, a lot more, not serious, because I was already serious, but a lot more straight, working much harder. You know, it gives you an idea of how hard it is to become a Formula One driver.
Did you have much contact with him over that weekend?
Really little. He was surrounded by hundreds of people, and it was difficult to talk to him. Obviously, we spoke a little bit on the podium, and I have to say that we became a little bit friends there, because after, when we saw each other in another occasion, and once I read in Formula One, obviously, for me, he was a hero, and he had a lot of respect for me because of that event in go-kart, because he used to love go-kart, and I think he respected me a lot, because he knows that the go-kart driver, you know, it's a big benchmark for to see the level of a driver, and all of us, we used to love go-kart. But Michael especially used to go quite often go-karting in Italy, and we did a few events together, or charity race car together, and he was always a difficult one to beat. But it was amazing because there was a lot of respect between us.
What did that win in 2001 do for your career?
Of course, it changed drastically everything because made everything so quick. You know, I was maybe the fastest driver to jump from a go-kart to a Formula One because I ended up winning this championship, I think it was October or November 2001. And in September or October 2002, I tested the Formula One Williams in Valencia. So this transition was really short. And obviously, in that day in Kirpen, there was Jonathan Williams, the son of Sir Frank, that we start having contact there, talking about the future. And
as a direct result of that win in Kirpen, the Williams test came around.
He was following me since quite a while because he was a big passionate about go-kart drivers. And he was looking at young talent coming. So he started keeping an eye on me during that year 2001, and that once I won the championship, we started talking about a potential test in 2002.
Jonathan had just found Juan Pablo Montoya, or actually just a few years before, but and I see you and Montoya as quite similar drivers, impetuous, fast, no nonsense. I could see you being a Jonathan Williams kind of guy.
Yeah. But I also am a huge fan of Juan Pablo because he was the kind of driver I like. You know, as you say, you know, he was no politics, no bullshit, just flat out, close the visor and give everything it goes. So I was kind of similar. I didn't have the same career as him, but the same result, let's say, in career as him, but always because of being at the right place of the right time, I think. I think Jonathan used to love that kind of that style of driver, similar a little bit to Dr. Marco, because in my first test that he gave me in Pannonia Ring with a Formula 3000 after I came from Formula Renault, I was physically an extreme test for me because how hard it was the car, but he used to love my passion, my hunger, my need of speed. I think is that what he really like in drivers.
Need for speed. Look, can you tell us a little bit more about that first Formula One test? It's November 2002, 9 months after you've won the karting world championship. You go to Valencia. Your karting rival Giorgio Pantano is also being tested at that time. Did you feel ready for a Formula One car?
I think that the age, when you are so young and you go against anything and you think you are not the king, but you want to go always over your limits, you never think if you are ready or not. You just go. You just sit in the car, close the visor and go. And I have to say that physically, I was definitely not ready. Because I remember at the end of the 1.5 day of testing that I got, I couldn't even eat because I was keeping my head with the one hand and putting the food in my mouth with the other because my neck was destroyed.
And Valencia was actually quite a slow track.
Exactly, yeah. But the last corner with the never hands, yeah. I think I did 74 laps in one day. Definitely physically was something that I was struggling. I think was also a result of my performance because I remember I was really fast, pretty close to Juan Pablo with the used tires. Then when he was putting a new tire, he gave me, I'm not sure, I think 8 tenths or something like that. And it was only in 2 corners because it was the super high speed corner, the turn one and the penultimate corner on the right in Valencia, because he could keep up with the neck, of course, because he was trained enough. And me, I couldn't keep my neck. So I was slowing down in the corner and I was losing time in that specific corner, and that was only because of physical. So definitely my physical side was not ready.
Tonio, when you're so fresh out of karting, how do you explore the limit of a Formula One car?
You just try. You just try and you are shocked the first few laps when you jump in a car with, at the time it was nearly 1,000 horsepower already because it was the BMW Williams. There was a winning car. And it was incredible. I remember the feeling I had when I went on throttle the first couple of laps. I was shocked. I said, wow, this is incredible. And the adrenaline I had in myself was huge. But it's something that it feeds me. You know, I live of adrenaline. And this was giving me even a bigger boost to try. And it was an amazing feeling because it's something that after a few laps, it becomes natural. I think in your head, even if you're going much, much faster, but your head automatically makes vision much slower. So it doesn't seem that different, but the approach into the corner is just, okay, I have to do it. So you just try. So lap by lap, you get closer to a limit that you think that never comes. Because Formula One seems that it seems limitless for the performance that it has.
This episode is brought to you by Bitdefender, team partner of Ferrari. In cybersecurity and Formula One, every millisecond counts. Only the most advanced cars and dedicated teamwork win races on the track. And only the most advanced security technology and elite specialists have the power to prevent, defend, and stop cyber attacks. Technology makes all the difference in who has a clear advantage, where Bitdefender is renowned for driving leading-edge innovation in cybersecurity. Bitdefender helps safeguard the data of Ferrari. They supercharge the cybersecurity team's ability to swiftly identify and respond to any threat that arises. Bitdefender has earned the trust of Ferrari for its commitment to innovation and for being at the forefront of cybersecurity to manage continuous and evolving challenges. Join the millions of consumers and businesses that trust Bitdefender to protect their digital world. Visit bitdefender.com to learn more about how Bitdefender supports Ferrari to stay ahead of cyber threats and how you can make your digital life safer. Let's fast forward a year. You've just done your first season in Formula 3000 and you get another test, this time with Sauber alongside Felipe Massa. Do you feel that you explored the limits of the car better then because you had that much more experience?
Definitely. The year after, in 2003, when I drove the Sauber, I was definitely a much stronger person. I had 1 year behind me of Formula 3000 that was already much tougher physically compared to Formula 3. And my test in Jerez, it was super. It was a mega test and we went really fast. But unfortunately, Mr. Bernie killed my dream before the test, actually at 7:30 in the morning before we jump in the car. Basically, he speaking to Mr. Sauber, they confirmed Villeneuve that he had to drive that year. You remember that was the year where Villeneuve came back after a few years. And before my test, Mr. Sauber told me that we were going to have the test, but the seat was already gone. So they gave me a knife in my stomach a few minutes before my test, but I enjoyed the test because it was still a great experience, and I will thank Sauber for that.
When you get told on the morning of your test that you're no longer in the running for a race seat because Villeneuve's got it, does that take the pressure off? Does it make you angry? How did you feel?
Yeah, for sure, you become really disappointed because everything you're dreaming of, it falls apart. But doesn't make things easier. Maybe it makes in terms of pressure, because you drive with more, not relaxed, but with less pressure of making mistakes. So you want to try more. You enjoy more the test. But for sure, the world collapsed on me the morning at 7:30 when I received that phone call. But as I say, it was an amazing experience and was part of the learning. I got the experience, the chance a few years after. It was a shame because I think that position, in the moment of Sauber, that after it changed into BMW, I think it could have changed my career. But, these are the sliding doors of Formula One career.
And it was a good car, that Sauber, the following year, wasn't it?
It was a good car. It was a definitely good car. Really good balance. Obviously, I remember there was quite a big difference in engine because the BMW the year before I tested with Williams, it was maybe one of the strongest at the time of the old Formula One paddock. And I remember the aggressivity of the engine in Valencia. In Sauber, maybe it was even 1 year after, so I was more ready. Everything looked more smoother, much easier to handle. But once again, the team was really professional. It was an amazing test. It was just the shame for the phone call at 7:30.
Well, look, the big chance comes thanks to Red Bull. When did you first come on Dietrich Mateschitz's radar?
I know, I was always, since the beginning of my single-seater career, I was always part of the Red Bull family. So I will be always thankful forever to Didi because he was the person that made my dream come true. So I was always under the radar of Didi. And I used to be one of his favorite drivers because at the beginning we were only few junior driver in Red Bull. So it was me, Vettel, Friesacher. We were like five or six. And and I was one of his favorites. So one after the delusion, how do you say the what happened in Sauber, I think he thought now that he was already thinking about a project in Formula One, buying a Formula One team. He thought it was the right time for me to step up in the project of Red Bull being a Formula One team, and that's why he gave me the opportunity after in 2005. He wanted me to drive, but obviously when he started the Formula One team, there was already David as an experienced driver in the team, dragging the technical side, all the environment, and me and Klien, we had to share the seat, if you remember, in 2005. And this was a decision that he took because he wanted to give me the possibility finally to drive. But then, unfortunately, it was not the right decision for both of us, for me and Christian, that we were both trying for hard for our career, but it was not really useful to have four races and then stepping out to give a chance to your colleague. So we decided to stop after the first few swaps.
I was going to say, because four races on, four races off, it's difficult to get into a rhythm with the engineers,
exactly,
with the car.
Exactly.
Can I ask you a little bit more about Didi Mateschitz? Because I remember at the time you describing your relationship with him as him being paternal towards you, like your racing father. When you look back on it now, do you still feel that way?
Definitely, because we lost a special person. That's no words to say different, because he was really a person of heart. He really put a lot of passion in his brand. You know, Red Bull, the brand Red Bull, not Red Bull Formula 1, the brand Red Bull is a huge family. And especially with the athletes, he used to have an amazing feeling. And every time we were together, was never like a business conversation or, let's say, talking between people that are working in the same team or things like that. He was always such a nice person, really friendly, really helpful, ready for help you in anything you need, and was really a person with a huge heart, and I will be definitely thankful to him forever, and it's a big shame that he's not here anymore.
Without him, would you have made it into Formula One?
Good question. You know, I had a lot of sliding doors, but I never thought at this one. I think I was definitely one of the young guns coming up from a single-seater. So maybe I would have had the chance as well. But he also supported me in single-seater category. So I don't know if me and my manager, only ourselves, would have been good enough to find other sponsor, because motorsport is really expensive, so you need to have big support from sponsor. I didn't have my family money to support my driving when I was younger, so without Red Bull I don't know if I would have been in Formula One, but possibly yes, because I was definitely winning everything that was in my career in the early step, karting, Formula Renault, Formula 3, 3000. I did a lot. Everything I was doing it right. But then you never know, you know, the chance to be in Formula One is only for 20 people.
I mean, as you say, sliding doors. But when Villeneuve got moved sideways from Sauber, had you not been a Red Bull guy, I wonder whether that might have been an opportunity. But
yeah, but you never know at the end, because even when before I signed my contract with actually it was the week after I signed with Red Bull, then I was speaking to Flavio Briatore, obviously, that he was helping a lot the Italians. He helped Trulli, he helped Fisichella, so we were having contact for me as well, but I already signed with Red Bull, so I'm in these things I'm really strict. So once I signed, I committed with Red Bull, and there was no position to talk, but it's part of the business.
Final one on Mateschitz. Did you have his mobile number? Could you ring him at any time?
At any time.
Isn't that a crazy thing? The big boss of Red Bull, one of the biggest companies in the world, and you as a young 20-something could just phone him up.
Yeah, I get goosebumps when I think of it, but that's the way it was. That's what I mean with a person of heart. You know, he has many thousands of athletes around the world, but he's there for his brand, for his people, the people he supports, is there for them. And when I used to be in Salzburg, was really great, because he was always there for you, and that's for me something unpayable in any kind of companies.
So, that 2005 season, we have touched on it, but you had David Coulthard as the lead driver, you and Christian Kleen sharing that second car for at least the first half of the year. How did you and Christian rub along, first of all? Did you share data, or were you hyper-competitive with each other, wanting to outdo the other one?
No, we were sharing everything, because that was the mentality of the team, that we were sharing all together the data analysis. So we were pushing all three, me, David and Christian, to give more to the team, to be more information, more data, pushing ourselves to the limit. So there was for sure nothing hidden between us. And I have to say that at the beginning with Christian, although we were we knew already before, because we were Red Bull athletes outside Formula One, so we used to see us in Fuschel, in training camp and so on, and we were quite friends. After this experience in Formula One, we became really good friends, because obviously when we closed the visor, each of us was driving for our own career, because we were going 110% to achieve our goal to get the seat. But then after, when we were in the garage with the engineer, out of the track, we became a really good friend, and we were helping together to work for the same target. It might sound weird, but he became one of my best friends in life. So it's Christian is a fantastic person for me.
You talk about the vibe in the team being very open and honest, drivers, everybody pushing in the same direction. Off track, I very much remember Red Bull being the party team back then. As a young 20-something, was that a distraction?
I think I was handling pretty well, but of course, because I was going back to the sliding doors, you know, I was in a period of time where Red Bull was more focused in marketing, because it was the way they entered in Formula One, because they were an amazing brand, and I'm working mainly with marketing, and there were so many parties during the year. And obviously, as a Red Bull athlete, they invited me, and I was going there. But I think I was managing quite well, because in the track, I was one person, in the events I was a different one, and I was, I think, one of the best character for a Red Bull. I really linked with the brand. I used to love their mentality. Because I live of adrenaline, similar thing to Red Bull, because of all the kind of crazy sports that they do and that they push. So at the beginning it was difficult, because when you're so young, obviously you see parties and everything around, it can distract you. But when I was switching back into the race mode, track mode, or let's say driver mode, I was a different person, you know, still pretty different from other drivers in terms of look, because this was also one of my characteristics, but only because I want to be myself.
Tonio, you keep talking about being an adrenaline junkie, and because of all the sports that Red Bull are involved in, away from motor racing, I'm thinking skiing and etc. Did you do all that as well?
Everything. That's why the Red Bull make me feel like a kid in the chocolate yes. factory, you know, because every time they were talking, looking at me, I said, would you like to do? Yes. And even without listening what it was. So
what was the coolest thing you did?
I mean, they made me drive a MotoGP. And wow. And I can confess now that that the only motorbike I drove before the time was a big scooter. But then when they told me, you want to drive a MotoGP? And I said, yeah, of course. Then after, when it was like 2 months before this test, I start saying to the marketing guys, guys, but maybe it's better we organize a test with a bike with the gears, because I never drove, I only have a scooter. So they told me, really? I said, yeah. So they organized a half a day in Silverstone with a Suzuki 600 bike. And that was my only experience before a MotoGP test. That actually went also quite well, because I was only 11 seconds off the pace from the pole position.
Was it at Silverstone?
The test was in Valencia, the day after the last race of MotoGP, with a Suzuki of John Hopkins, because John drove my Toro Rosso and I drove the Suzuki MotoGP, and was an amazing thing. And even parachuting, I drove as well the airplane, the acrobatic airplane. And these are some things that I will always remember in my life. I was also trying to organize a jump without the parachute, like Mr. Pastrana, my friend from the US. Because that's what I mean, living of adrenaline, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's why I was
not
matching.
Not while
really
you were
well.
An active driver.
Actually, of course. Yeah. I did parachute on Thursday of the Formula One race of Spa. I did skydiving.
Oh, my goodness. The perfect Red Bull driver.
Definitely.
Look, your teammate in 05, David Coulthard, let's talk about him. How easy was David to work with, and what was the biggest thing you learned from him?
The biggest thing I learned from him was definitely the commitment of with the team, because he is a really professional driver. I think he's the perfect image of a driver. He's really strict, really methodical in the way he works with the team. And I have to say that I also, not learned, because unfortunately I was never so good, but he knows how to talk to people, you know. And saying that he's really political maybe might sound weird, but he knows how to talk with media. He talks how to know with he knows how to talk with the team principals. You know, he knows how to put himself always in a strong position, let's say.
Your expense?
For himself, you know, let's say, for the best of him, let's say, not thinking who is the competitor, let's say. For sure, he was really good. You know, some drivers are really good in talking. Someone, they're not talking at all, they just drive, you know. And he's really good in the marketing political aspect as well. And it's something I always wanted to learn from him, but I never reached this goal.
But he had 10 years experience in Formula One, and he was just using that.
But I think it was not an experience coming from driving. Is the way you are. You know, you cannot ask this to Kimi, because you know that Kimi is the way he is. I made an example of Kimi because he's the the limit maybe of speaking little. But you have drivers, you know, like Sebastian Vettel, David, Mark Webber as well. They really know how to play with the mind, you know, because they're really good in this. And it's a quality. I'm not talking bad.
So it seems to me that knowing what you know now, age 43, if you went back and had your Formula One career again, that aspect is maybe the one thing you might change.
Definitely.
Knowing what you know now, all the experience you have, the way you deal with the FIA, of course, as a steward, but also the way you talk to the drivers.
For sure, definitely. It's something that is part of a champion as well. It's part of a driver career as well. You need to know how to handle yourself with people. And sometimes it's hard to accept, but you cannot say everything you think. So you have to filter sometimes what you're thinking. And this was a problem that I never had filter in my time.
End of 05, the Red Bull racing dream ends. But you switched to the baby team, Toro Rosso, which has just been bought. Minardi's just been bought and renamed Toro Rosso. How exciting was that project for you?
I felt really great once Didi, Mr. Mateschitz, he said this to me, because obviously after what happened between me and Christian in 2005, he came to me and he said, "Tonio, don't worry. Next year we are thinking to buy a Minardi team. We want to make a full Italian team based in Italy with you as a main driver, the Italian name, so a project around you." So I felt really privileged and was an amazing thing for me. Obviously, I felt, okay, finally, I realized my dream to drive the full season with a Formula One team and to be part of a big project that it will grow up. As I said, I felt privileged and was an amazing feeling. And I have to say that I couldn't choose any better team to start with the full season, because Minardi, once he switched to Toro Rosso, it keeps growing, improved a lot the facility, the number of people, and the people in Italy, they were really amazing. The group of people coming from Minardi was an amazing group of hard worker and passionate about motorsport and Formula One. And I still have a lot of friends of them that I see them on track still now with Alfa Tauri. And it's amazing to see how much passion they put into this sport.
How good was that car, that first Toro Rosso?
Of course, it was the first year. You cannot expect too much. We also had a V10 with less power, because at the beginning there was, I think, was a late move, late bought over from Red Bull. So there was something we couldn't organize, a V8 engine like all the others. So we drove with a V10 with less power, less revs, basically, with a restriction on the air scoop. And
was that engine really talky though at places like Monaco?
It had a lot more bottom because was there a lot less delay when you were going on throttle compared to the V8. Was a lot stronger in the low rev, but after it obviously was the power was weak because there was a restrictor on the air scoop. The revs were I think 4,000 or 5,000 less than should be. It was overall weaker than what all the other teams were using, but was an interesting first year. Was a good experience, and for the team, for me, and we were preparing pretty good for the second year for the 2006. And we also had some good races. It was a shame we lost a podium in Montreal. We had a few occasions where we could have finished pretty good in the points. We scored a few points in a couple of races, but we could have achieved a lot more.
You were always good at Montreal.
Montreal, yes, was one of my favourite tracks. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
I mean, as you say, missed opportunity there. I remember you overtaking Michael Schumacher on the last lap.
Yeah, but that was a longer story because I qualified P5.
Yeah,
and then
Massa
crashed into me at the start. So I went into the pit at the first
That was
lap.
2010, though, wasn't it?
That was 2010, yes. Yeah. I was super fast then. I had the speed to end up on the podium. But the first corner, Massa did a bit of a wild move. So we crashed and I lost the front wing. I went to the pit and basically I was last at the first lap and I ended up, I think, P9, passing Michael at the last lap. Yeah,
was, amazing race.
Was an amazing race.
Was it a case of take the downforce off and the car feels a little bit more alive and your feel for a car? Is that what came through there?
Actually, in that year was one of my worst year in terms of problems because I was a nightmare. It was the year of the F-duct, if you remember.
Your elbow out,
the
your
elbow
knee
out.
Out
I remember what there was. You were... Stalling the rear wing.
The rear wing, yeah.
And for whatever reason, it was a really complex system because basically all the team copied from McLaren. They was the first one to put it in Bahrain. Lewis and I think Nico was the teammate. I don't remember was the second driver, Jensen maybe. And basically all the other team had to copy. And Force India did his project really quickly, but it was really complex system. And for whatever reason, in my car was never working. I think it worked 2 races out of 15 where we used. And in Montreal, because of the low downforce, like Monza, was removed. That's why we were back in business and we were so fast. And we were P5. Because in Montreal and Monza, you don't use the F-duct because there was no way. Even if you stole the rear wing, it's like it's the same. We were back in business and we were super fast. But in the rest of the year, was a nightmare because it was me and Sutil, my teammate. And in my car, was never working for whatever reason. I don't think the team did it on purpose because they were amazing with me, and Force India was pushing for the result, but I was always really unlucky, and many times I was like 10-12 k slower on the straight compared to my teammate, and was only the way it was. We always fought to understand what was the problem, but there was always a leak in the system of my car.
Just to fill in the gaps for people listening, if you're not familiar, so Tonio leaves Toro Rosso at the end of 2007. You become test driver for Force India in 08. And then in 09, you've already mentioned a podium gone missing in 2006. When Giancarlo Fisichella goes to Ferrari for the last 5 races of 2009, of course, you get the step up to race for Force India. First race, your home race at Monza. And that, I'm going to put it to you, Tonio, was another podium gone begging.
Another one. Unfortunately, another one. It seems that every time I was close to the podium, there was something dark in the
gearbox,
destiny.
I think, that day, wasn't it? But you again, really quick. First
yes,
race for the
first
team.
First race back in the car in Monza in my home race, and was amazing because free practice on Friday, you could straightly see that I was getting back in the system and in the rhythm pretty quickly. Then Saturday, we end up in qualifying, and straight away, I was fast. And then at the time we used to qualify with the fuel we had to start the race with. And basically, I remember I end up in Q3. I was really pumped up because the car was perfect. I was feeling good and I wanted to go for the pole. Seems like a dream, but I was really feeling good and the car was really amazing. And then after I hear in the radio before the Q3 starts, Vijay Mallya coming to me and say, "Tonio, I believe in you. You should go with the full tank for one-stop strategy." I go there, no, please, Vijay, no, let me go for the two stop. At least we can fight for the pole. No, Tonio, we believe in you. You have to go for the one stop. We put Adrian on the two stop and you go for a single stop. You know, maybe sometimes I'm too soft, but I felt always really thankful for, you know, the position that they always give me, you know, and I said, okay, Vijay, if you want, I go for the single stop. And then I still made an amazing qualify because I did P7 with a full tank going for the single stop. And in the race as well, we start the race, we start catching up, and basically I was like, I think 17 laps to the end after my pit stop, so I was going until the end of the race. I was P3, if I'm not wrong. My consistency and my speed, it was for P2 or P3 at the end. But then a gearbox issue stopped me 15 or 16 laps to the end. And it was really another dark day, even though everything was perfect until this last 15 laps. But then after the gearbox gave up and was really... you know, these are the things that change your life, change your career. When you end up in the podium, you enter into a different group of driver. You know, I had a few chances, let's say 4 or 5 times chance of being on the podium, but for whatever reason, the car always broke. Maybe the car always hated to see me on the podium. I don't know what was the reason, but it was a shame because these are the results that can change your future and your career.
Let's talk about another great race, and we're going to wind the clock back a couple of years. China 2007. By this time, you've got Sebastian Vettel as your teammate. A young Seb has come in to replace Scott Speed halfway through that year. You out-qualify Vettel in China, and you finish 6th.
Yeah, this the way you said it looks nice because it was a great race, but it was a really unfortunate race because I had an amazing qualifier. I did P11 because both of us, me and Sebastian, we were on a similar strategy. Basically, we had the same fuel in qualifying, and I think he had a problem if he finished P18 or P19. So at the end, when we decided for the race, I said, okay, I have to go for a two-stop strategy because obviously I need to keep up the pace with the others for the full length of the race, and he went on a single stop strategy. And basically, it was an amazing race. I had a really good pace, but then obviously I had to do 3 stops because it started raining, or I don't remember. There was a change between rain to dry or dry to rain, basically in the mid of the race. So I ended up doing 3 stop, and Sebastian did 1 stop in total. It was amazing result for Toro Rosso because we finished P4, Sebastian, and P6, me, and I made a mega race. But at the end, obviously, all the impact was on Sebastian that he finished before. So I was hidden as well by that. But I mean, in myself, as you know me, I always feel really confident and secure. It's just a shame because, you know, my career could have had a difference.
That was a race where it was so easy to get it wrong. Just look at what happened to Lewis Hamilton. You know, he ended up in the gravel trap in the pit lane. And it was actually that race, I think you could argue strongly, that decided the world championship that year. But it was a great race by you. How did you rub along with Sebastian? What are your memories of being his teammate?
Pretty good. Sebastian, he was a pretty introvert when he came to Formula One. He was really, really, really young, and we were totally different persons. Let's say different kind of character or different kind of attitude. And I was young and wild, but Sebastian, he was more quiet, say, compared to me. That he had a more straight way of seeing the things, even though it was with the adrenalinic brand of Red Bull, you know, we were a totally different approach with the team, with the fans, with the brand, let's say. And I always thought that Sebastian was amazing in creating a group. Sebastian, I think he had a lot of similarity with Michael Schumacher in terms of this, of method of working on track. And he was a really great person to bring the people towards him, to convince them about the right things to do. And he was a good... he was dragging the team really strongly. And this, I think, was one of his quality and characteristic that I respect a lot.
Was he immediately fast?
It was okay fast. It was not crazy fast at the beginning, especially in the year where we were to meet. I was never struggling in terms of pace. Actually, it was quite often... I never had problem of speed, let's say. This was always my great quality. But it was definitely really good in being at the right place at the right time in the strategy, tire choice. I think he has born under the right star, because he always had also sometimes the luck going towards him, but you create your own luck, and in this he was always really good.
Given that you were able to match him for speed, how disappointed were you that you got shown the door at the end of the year?
Super disappointed, ultra disappointed, because was a decision taken by Berger that he wanted me out of the team, because at the time he was part owner with Mr. Matyshyts of Toro Rosso.
Why did Gerhard Berger want you out? It doesn't seem to make sense on paper, at least.
Because he was pushing for Bourdais. At the time, he had interest with Sébastien Bourdais. When I received the paper that I was not going anymore to be a Toro Rosso driver, I was super surprised and shocked, because I had a really good year and a really good performance. So I didn't expect it at all. So I was really pissed off about that. But it was pretty clear there was for other interests that were in the team due to Gerhard's ideas or projects. It was just a shame, but at the end, how can you say, we are employee, so they decide what they do with their team.
Were you expecting Didi Matyshyts to fight your corner a bit more than he did?
I wanted to, but I understood the way why he did not, because basically he was the guy that put Vettel instead of speed of Scott. So he decided for, let's say, 50% of the team during the year. He decided this swap of driver together with Dr. Marco. So he left the other 50% to Gerhard, because he was part owner with him. And that's why my life ended with Toro Rosso, even though Dr. Marco offered me a seat, a test driver seat in Red Bull for 2008. But the offer of Force India at the time was pretty good, because it was a 4-year contract. And I was really pissed off with this situation with Gerhard, so I didn't feel comfortable to stay in that situation. So now it's past, of course. I always, as I said, I always be forever thankful to Dr. Marco, Matyshyts, for the support and everything. But definitely, my block in my life continuing with the Red Bull was definitely Gerhard.
You mentioned the replacing of Scott with Sebastian Vettel, and it all came to an end between speed and Red Bull at the Nürburgring, that wet race. Can you confirm something for me? There was talk at the time of a big bust-up between Franz Tost and Scott immediately after that race. I've asked both of them, and they're both a little bit coy about it. Did you see what happened?
yes, I saw it. I saw
proper
it.
Shouting match.
Big time, yeah, big time. But in the pit lane and entering the garage. But it was a big shame, because, Scott, he's a big friend, and I respect him because he was super fast. Sometimes people, when they speak about Scott, they say, yeah, but, he was not fast. It's not true. Scott was super fast, was maybe a bit inconsistent. But he was a cowboy, it was the way it was. But he had really great skill. But after, there was obviously the pressure of Vettel, that he was coming super with a big hype from the smaller category. And at the first few mistakes, and especially after such a fight in Nürburgring between Franz and Scott, was, let's say, an easy open door for the change to be happen.
So your final team is HRT 2011. It wasn't a competitive situation. The team was run by your former F3 boss, Colin Collis. But why did you do it? What's the attraction for a guy like you, who's super fast, to go and just be at the back?
Because after another shock taken from Force India, basically my seat was taken from Paul Di Resta, because I had another year contract, and basically they hugged me at the end of the year, Christmas party, and I received basically a letter 4th of January that I was not going to be the driver for 2011. I was shocked because I couldn't believe what happened, and was budget situation, because obviously Paul was bringing Mercedes gearbox and a lot of other things that I can understand was just the way it happened, that why I didn't really like. So but this is part of the business once again. So at the end of the day, I ended up in January without seat. The season was going to start soon, and I didn't know what to do. There were no other seat available, and there were not a space even as a test driver with big teams. So Mr. Collis was also always one person that believed in me, because he brought me to Force India as well, and I will be always one of the person that I will be thankful to. And he offered me this chance, and for me it was like a transition year where I could try to negotiate other position for the future. So keeping in the racing loop, because obviously when you stop for too long, then after it can be there were not so many tests anymore. You know, you play a lot of time in the simulator, you work a lot of time in the simulator, but it's a bit different at the time. Maybe now is not anymore. Now is pretty similar to reality, but at the time it was still a bit different to be away from racing. So I decided to take this chance. The people at the Mr. Carabante family, they were really nice people, and was a good year. I cannot say that I enjoyed driving the car, because it was really tough. It was a really tough season because the car was really difficult to drive. But I think we did big efforts during the season, a big step forward. I felt part of a good environment where there were possibility to improve, not to expect to become world champion, but possibility to improve. And in the meantime, I was negotiating with at the time it was Renault, it was other team that we were talking with, but it didn't work. So once then, after Mr. Carabante went out, there were other political change inside the team, I gave up because it was too confusing, the situation, and I decided to stop and try other roads.
Halfway through that 2011 year, Daniel Ricciardo came in. How quick was he from the outset?
Daniel was definitely quite good from the beginning. He struggled the first race in Silverstone, but it was a rainy situation. Was pretty difficult for him. I think it was his debut at Silverstone. But then after in the next coming races, he had a good pace. He was catching back, and he was giving good performance. So you can see that he had the speed. And once more, I felt like being the benchmark for Dr. Marco, for the drivers, because he said, you know, I put Daniel in HRT because with Tonio we see the level of Daniel, and it make me feel still pretty, you know, not privileged, but that you count, let's say, you know, the people count on you, they know that you're fast. So at the end, it was going pretty well. I growed up during this six race or seven race he made. After that, we all know what Daniel did, so he deserved all the results he made.
I did want to ask you before you go, who on the current grid most reminds you of yourself?
You know, it's difficult to say. Maybe they might think that I believe too highly of myself, but for me, you know, Max, he was like, he has a lot of characteristics, but obviously he's a super champion. I'm not trying to compare myself with Max, but I was pretty similar, because I used to try to bring the car over the limit every time, and sometimes even too much, because I was putting myself, obviously, a lot over the limit many times. Sometimes I spun, sometimes I made crash at the beginning, the first few years of my career, especially with Red Bull and Toro Rosso. But this developed my speed potential, and I think is a little bit what Max did at the beginning. And now he's nailing everything, because he also put the head together, and now he's not making any more mistake, and he's super fast anywhere and everywhere he goes.
You know, it's funny you should mention Max, because of course, in that championship-winning F3000 season that you did in 2004, you won, what was it, all but three races?
Yeah.
Kind of had your own Max moment back
then. Yeah, pretty similar. We had 9 pole position out of 10 qualify and 7 races out of 10.
What was it like to ride that crest of a wave when you sort of, you went into every race, I assume, thinking, right, pole and win, that's the only objective?
Yeah, once you start having that loop at the beginning of the season, then you fight against yourself to get better and better, because obviously you realize you have the team working super well. At the time was Harden team, there was an amazing team, a super car, and it was a super package together with me, because I was one of the young guns at the time, plus the car was perfect, they were nailing it, the pit stop, the strategy, the setups, and there was a massive understanding between me and my engineer when we were talking on the radio. Within seconds we were understanding which way to go with the setup. This is also a really important thing for a driver, to trust 100% your engineer and to understand each other really quickly. So that was an amazing year. So I understand why Max is always pushing himself to the limit. Even now, it was amazing, you know, and we can say that I felt a little bit like him at the time. But you never think at that. You just want
next
the maximum
race,
every
next
time.
Race,
next race, exactly.
Yeah. And what does the future hold? I hope we're going to see you as a driver steward with the FIA at lots more Formula One races, because you're excellent at it. But away from racing, I mean, I'm talking to a restaurateur, aren't I? What have you got? 5 restaurants now?
Yes. Together with my wife, obviously, we started a separate business as well in the F&B, food and beverage. And now we have 5 restaurants in Italy, and the family is growing in terms of restaurant. I have a daughter, but one is enough.
Where are the restaurants?
Yeah, 4 in Milan and 1 in Pescara, the city where I grew up. And now we are working on different projects around the world. But
Around the world? Slowly.
Yes.
You're expanding outside of Italy.
We are working on that, because we have a few offers for that.
But Tonio, for when people are next in Italy, what's the name of the restaurant they might want to come and eat?
Ah, of course. In Milan, it's called Penelope a Casa, or the Dome, that is on the main cathedral square in the center of Milan. So these two are the brands. Then there are two brands in Milan. Oh,
well, look, very good luck with that.
And thanks.
Look, and many congratulations on it was a great career. It didn't get you the wins that you deserved in Formula One, but you left your mark on the sport that will last forever.
I have to say that I feel this when I come back to the track. I feel a lot of love in a way with all my friends and the people where I grew up with, and the respect I used to have from them in the past and still now. So I enjoy being in the track. I enjoy being a steward, because I think it's good for the sport to have people like us involved in this kind of decision. I hope that my position, or in the future, I will stay more and more involved in Formula One, because I feel it's always my life. I don't know if I will race again in some category for, because I always have the adrenaline and the need for speed in myself, need for win. So at the moment, this couple of years, I'm not racing that much, and I'm suffering, but we'll...
But are you still parachuting and skiing and...
Of course.
Tonio, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
Clearly, Tonio is a man loving life. Restaurateur, raconteur, biker, skier, pilot, what an array of interests he has. Keep it going, Tonio. Now, I really loved that chat, because I learned so much more about him and the ins and outs of his Formula One career. Tonio's relationships with Didi Matajic and Michael Schumacher, and why he was dropped from Toro Rosso. Time has clearly given Tonio some perspective on Formula One. He now knows how to navigate the paddock, and it all combines to make him an excellent driver steward for the FIA. Tonio, many thanks for your time, and I'll see you at a race again soon. Well, what did you make of what he had to say? Do you think Tonio deserved better in Formula One? Let me know your thoughts through all the usual means. I'm at TomClarksonF1 on Twitter, or you can use the hashtag F1BeyondTheGrid. Which brings me on to what you sent in about George Russell after last week's show. Wasn't George great? So open and honest about his crash in Singapore, and I loved hearing about his new passion for freediving. We got loads of feedback, and here are some of your messages. Let's start with this from Catherine. This Singapore Grand Prix was my first F1 attendance, and it amazes me how quickly George was able to move on from that hugely disappointing moment. He has excellent communication skills, and this podcast was, as always, a joy to listen to. Well, Catherine, thank you very much for that message. Thanks for getting in touch. And I do agree, George has excellent communication skills. I always enjoy chatting to him. And what about this from Selda? I still believe Russell has the potential to become a champion-level driver, but like Leclerc, he just needs to iron out the mistakes. Verstappen became a champion-level driver when he managed that. Well, you're right, Zelda. If he does manage to do that, he will be a championship challenger, and I believe George is good enough to iron out those mistakes. And finally, here's 7BD273, very straightforward name. Such a great listener as always. George is not only one of the fastest, but one of the most intelligent and driven racers on the grid. It's been fantastic to watch his journey, and I'm sure he has big things ahead of him. All the best. Well, all the best to you too, 7BD. Thank you for the message. That is a lovely note about George. Now we're going to leave it there for messages this week. Thank you to everyone who got in touch, and thank you for listening as well. And please remember to send in your thoughts about Vitantonio Liuzzi in time for next week's show. And if you want to hear more insight into Red Bull's remarkable Formula One journey, then do check out my recent chats with Red Bull junior drivers Christian Kleen and Scott Speed, and the team's legendary designer Adrian Newey. You can easily find those by scrolling through the F1 Beyond the Grid feed. Also, F1 Nation's review of a dramatic Qatar Grand Prix weekend is available now wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'll be back next week with another great guest from the world of Formula One. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.